know, we'll talk about it. I had an accident at 15. Mm. I lost my right eye and had a lot of people who doubted my ability and capability to do the things that I wanted to do. So I started off as somebody that had a lot of superstition. So I grew up in a Catholic house. So faith, I think, has formed the way that my parents think and the way that they brought me up. You know, I believe you do good things and the universe will pay you back.
Totally agree.
If whatever I wish for others, I think rebounds back on me. I truly believe that. And I think all these things that are out of my control, you sort of then start to use that internal voice and go, well, I can't do anything about that, but these are the things I can control. So I think to answer your question is, I started off somebody that was quite superstitious. And by the end, it was all about the process. And if the process fluctuated a little bit, then I think I was smart enough to think, well, that's just the way it is.
Don't just talk, walkers only. Don't just talk, it, walkers. Talk about walkers only, mate. I was just thinking about then. You remember Ben Walker, don't you?
I do remember Ben, yeah.
He did a season at Leeds when you were there.
He came to replace Yestin Harris.
That's right.
Yeah, he came to replace Yestin. The most multi-talented player.
Yeah.
I think I've ever seen, could kick, pass, both feet, you know, did it with absolutely, you know, when he's gone on to do his coaching, where it's really fancy and like proper against the orthodox way of playing the game. It didn't surprise me that he's thought of a different way to play the game, because he played it with no consequence to what he was doing. Mm. Even if you were stood at the side of him, you thought, I don't actually mind him doing what he does because he's going to get it right 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, it's interesting. So talk about him like that. So when I left Leeds, I went home, got my knee fixed, and I went to Australia. And I lived with Ben for 3 months, the first 3 months. And it was his brother. They were like two co-head
Chris
coaches.
Or it was Shane. No, the other one, Shane, yeah.
Chris actually come back and played a little bit at the end. But they didn't have much TV on in their house. Never had. So the kids would always be out in the back garden playing.
Yeah.
And they would put these drills in place, right? So, and we took it to pre-season training where they'd put like a load of cones and they'd be like, all right, that's granny's pots. Don't run over the pots. All right, there's the mower in the way. And you got to get around the mowers while you're playing against your brothers.
Yeah.
And it was, you had to think outside the box a lot then.
Yeah.
And they would do these drills at training. And they're really simple, but you had to think. And it makes sense now if you ever see Sam Walker playing for the Roosters. Yeah. He's very much an off-the-cuff type of player.
And that type of player in the game now, when I think about what we've got in the British game, so I remember the era of Sean Long, Yestin Harris, who I talked about then, Lee Breers later on. These players, and there were many before my era.
Yeah.
Because everybody played touch and pass as a warm-up to training. And I think that instinct that they forged through, you know, an old fella saying, come off my shoulder here, or run outside there, or I'll just give it inside there, I won't look. Those little habits that formed playing touch and pass for 20 minutes, half an hour, they then became part and parcel of what they did in the game. And then, during my time, it moved from that to structure, to discipline, to something like what we see now, where it's all out the back, out the back, out the back, and it's all very formulaic. Mm. And it'll be the player that everybody likes to watch, everybody enjoys watching, will be the ones that are just against the norm, and that real instinctive player.
Who would you say those instinctive players are now in the game?
Jake Connor's one of them. Mm. Jake Connor, he probably gets it wrong as much as he gets it right.
Yeah.
But when it does go right, he's exceptional to watch. It's a good question, that. So let me think about Leeds. Leeds have probably Blake Austin's their version of that, but I think he's more of a physical, off-the-cuff type of player. Wigan have Bevan French, Jay Field. I think they understand what they're doing. I don't think anybody else really sort of knows what they're doing, but has the ability to react. Jack Wellsby has got a little bit of that in him. I think everybody would want one.
Yeah.
But they're still trying to bring them back towards the pack. Mm. We haven't seen an out-and-out flair player for a long time. Maybe Breezy were the last one.
Breezy. He was a freak, wasn't
he? Yeah, good lad, Breezy. Good lad, Breezy. And I'm delighted for him. I'm really pleased to see where he is in his coaching journey now, because he's at Brisbane. He was at Wigan before that. He was a bit stagnant at Warrington. Everybody sort of think, in my opinion, I know Breezy enough to know how he felt, but I also know how people felt about him. He was just on the shelf of, he's a good lad.
He is.
You know, he likes a fun time. You know, we've all got a story about Breezy, but what he's managed to do is really tap into that side of his brain that understands there's the left and the right side of the brain. I know you're a really deep thinker. I'm looking forward to listening to some of your stuff, Ollie. I'm fascinated with your journey. But he's both sides of the brain, Breezy, and he can adapt and emotionally think, but he's also got the ability to break a game down in a really cold way.
That's right, that is. It's interesting to say that. And it's just funny how some people can just turn it on and off like that. Like, even if you broke it down to people before a game, right? There's some people in changing rooms laughing and joking and till literally getting on the field. Then you've got other people then, I've got to be focused probably the day before, what they eat, what they wear, what sock they put on right, what they, you know, and got to have everything down to micro right, you know, beforehand. If I was to reflect on you and your career, were you very much that type of mindset? It had to be very structured, or were you very much like, put my boots on, I'm ready to go?
I started off as somebody that had a lot of superstition. So I grew up in a Catholic house. So faith, I think, has formed the way that my parents think and the way that they brought me up. You know, I believe you do good things and the universe will pay you back.
Totally agree.
If whatever I wish for others, I think rebounds back on me. I truly believe that. And I think, you know, faith and God and all that's wrapped up in it. But fundamentally, it's about being a good person, because 100%. Most of the time, you know, things will come back to you. There's always going to be bumps in the road, but that's life. You just crack on with it. But when I first joined the professional, and it was semi-professional at first, there was a lot of things that were out of my control. Mm. But gradually, during that 15, 16-year period, I wrestled a lot of it back. Preparation, if I did my preparation, if I focused on, you know, at the back end, we didn't think too much about diet and stuff. We were just piling a plate of pasta or eating a jacket potato, and you thought that was it. But later on, towards the back end of my career, not sports science as such, but definitely listening to some of the educated minds around me, I started to wrestle a little bit of that control back. So then I became a switch flicker.
Mm.
So I could then get ready within 10, 15 minutes of the start of the whistle. And, you know, it's funny, and I love him to bits, and I'm sure we'll talk about him. But little Rob became my little partner that we'd just been messing about with the ball. So much so, we'd have to be in a different part of the changing room because we were just pissing about all the time. I'd enjoy winding him up, and he'd be winding me up, and we'd just be flicking a ball to one another. But for a large part of my career, the process that I followed pre-match was really regimented. But then when you go and play for Great Britain Ireland, and the facilities aren't the best, and all these things that are out of my control, you sort of then start to use that internal voice and go, well, I can't do anything about that, but these are the things I can control. So I think, to answer your question, is I started off somebody that was quite superstitious, and by the end, it was all about the process. And if the process fluctuated a little bit, then I think I was smart enough to think, well, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot, mate. I like that. And it shows, obviously, in your career. But if I look back, and we were talking just before we started speaking on the podcast about, you love a rough diamond.
Yeah.
And because you feel a bit of that in yourself.
Yeah.
Coming from Oldham, playing for Oldham, and moving from Oldham to Wigan, and then going, obviously, over to Leeds. There's obviously stepping stones there. Was it ever a feeling of, I suppose the word's belonging? Like, from where you've come from, an upbringing, I wouldn't say you've had the hardest upbringings, but just when you talk about being a rough diamond as such, would you ever see that in your journey as a player?
So I went to Oldham as an Oldham player. So did I belong there? I was fighting for everybody's approval, and literally fighting for everybody's approval on and off the pitch, because that was the way I was wired up. Back then, you could get away with it in the nightclubs of Oldham. I only got caught out once or twice when people actually found out what I got up to. But when I went to Wigan, that cost me my time at Wigan because I couldn't control, I couldn't behave really, essentially. I couldn't do the right things off the pitch. So then when I went to Leeds, belonging's a really good word because I feel like I wanted to belong to a successful family, values, and what I found at Oldham is it was about being a member of the community, that representing the 4,000 people on terraces, because we got 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people watching us Oldham in big games, and it was about doing the right thing by them and giving absolutely everything, and it didn't really matter what the scoreboard said. It was about how you yourself and as a team how we represented those people. I went to Wigan, it was all about winning, it was all about performance. They won everything they touched, and if they didn't win it, it was because they'd either had an off day or they'd switch focus to something else. But then when I went to Leeds, I felt during my time those two things merged. Gary was a big part of that. Mm. He believed in sending us out to the schools. I'm not close to that extent now, but at different times in my career, there'd be anywhere between 300 and 500 personal appearances by Rhino's players, whether it's schools, whether it's, you know, going into hospitals, or whether it's going into amateur clubs. And during the back end of my career and then post-career, I took a lot of that responsibility on. And you'll remember, Ollie, we went cleaning places up, didn't we? And I thought that would give everybody that wore that Leeds Rhinos badge a real sense of people respect it when we go over and above. And I thought that was a valuable thing to teach people. And, you know, you'll remember going into the prisons, won't you?
Yeah.
And what a day that was. And I'll let you into a secret now. Can you remember the time of year that we used to go?
No, when was it? I can't remember.
Right, so good mate of mine, Daz Fleer, anybody that hears me talk about favourite teammates, Daz Fleer, my old front row partner, really unselfish bloke, works in the gym at Armley Prison, which is the big building in Leeds. And Steve Fox, who's left now, he came onto the coaching staff at Leeds and he's gone to Huddersfield. So I'd liaise with those two blokes. We'd take you on a Saturday. If you remember, we'd do the hills in the morning.
Correct.
We'd go to the prison, have a bit of a tour. A couple of the inmates would do some talks. My name's Jim. I've gone on a night out.
Yeah.
I've whacked somebody who touched my missus on her arse, and I'm in here for 5 years now. And loads of really sort of really deep-rooted stories that would have connected with everybody. Then we'd have a bite to eat, and then I'd wave you off. It was the Saturday before you finished for Christmas. So I knew you were all going out.
I'd be like
rubbing you on the back, going, "Go on, lads, enjoy that." I'd be like, "I don't really feel like going out now."
We were all deflated, I think, after that.
Yeah. So, but I thought that was important. Yeah. And again, there's more than one way to skin a cat. You can't stand up and say you must not do this.
No.
But just to drop those little things in people's minds, because I made mistakes, I made lots of them, I'm still making them. But it's important you learn from them, innit?
Definitely, mate, definitely. And it's probably something I should share before to the listeners. So when I was younger, I went to Leeds. Barry's actually the guy. You signed me, Baz.
Yes.
And as an academy player.
Can't get it all right, can you?
Fucked up there. No, and like you said, when you talk about Leeds and the culture back then, like they've been a great team for years, right? But that era then, you know, you had so many leaders in that team, winning comps all the time. And it was like an honour, even as a reserve player, just to be like around these guys. And at that stage, we'd have like 5 top team, first team boys drop back to reserve team. So every week you'd have an experienced player who's won a couple of comps or might be coming back from injury. And you really think to yourself, shit, like we're lucky to be in this opportunity, you know. And probably reflecting on that now, I probably think, not as if you don't cherish it as much, but probably was I haven't had a deeper why to play than actually after leaving Leeds. Like, I always loved playing for teams, I always loved playing rugby league, but I think you were emotionally connected to Leeds, and we were very much embedded in us. Like, this is like you could see the golden ticket just there, and if you work hard enough, that's your opportunity. And but yeah, man, I'm very grateful because you signed me there, and I was up in Bob Pickle's house.
I was just going to say Bobby P. So I had a network of scouts, pretty much. Mm. Or Bob would be my right-hand man in terms of scouting.
Yeah.
Simon Bell later on after a few years, but
that's right.
But it was Bobby P, and Bobby P had a real good instinct, a real good eye for a rugby player. Spotted Adrian Morley and numerous others that had gone on to do lots of good things. Not always for Leeds, but he had a real good eye for a rugby league player. And he told me about you and Jack Pring, and that's another one. There was a third one.
It was someone on trial at one stage.
Yeah,
yeah. Jordan James's brother. If you
yeah. That's right. That's right. So the first time I watched you, you play for Wales 18s, I think it was. Right. And we brought you in. And again, and this is always been important to me within what I did for the Rhinos. Mm. So I did 6 years as head of youth in a network of scouts underneath me. I had maybe 4 full-time coaches and then another probably 10 part-time coaches that would all sort of report to me. And then at different times, there might have been 60 players.
Yeah, wow.
So to be at the top of that pyramid, having a real good link with the guy that was running the first team, whether it were Brian McLennan or Brian McDermott in the later stages, it was important to have synergy. But it wasn't necessarily my job to teach you how to catch pass tackle. No. I could do, and I did do, but I thought it was really important to give you that sense of belonging, going back to the word that you asked me about. So I always wanted outsiders. I liked a core of lads that were leads through and through, because, you know, they'll bang that chest and they'll do it all day, every day for next to no money. And those are the players that I think have been the bedrock and the foundation of a lot of the good things that have happened to the Rhinos as a club. And then just because you're not born in Leeds doesn't mean you can't be a Leeds lad. It doesn't prevent you from being Leeds through and through if you're not born in the city. But I liked, you know, we'd get Welsh lads, Irish lads, French lads, we'd bring them in, because I just liked to sprinkle some different experiences and different backgrounds, different journeys. So you ended up spending time with somebody who's from Cumbria or somebody who's from Beeston in Leeds. You sort of start sharing stories and you've got some similarities. You're not that different. But some of the things that have worked for them, you might think, oh, well, I'll have a little go at that.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Probably one of the biggest growing up stages in my life. You're still a teenager, but just living away from home and living obviously with Bob, and then getting to know, like you said, different cultures, a bit different
backgrounds. Who did you live in the house with? Were you always in Bobby's house?
I was always in Bob's. I was about to move out, I think, in this Brad Singleton's house, and then not long
that
after
was my
that,
house, that.
Yeah, was that your... Should we go down that path? Was that all right?
Well, and again, you know, I was lucky through my career to have some different opportunities, and I was a builder, so... Investing in property and investing in myself and all those other things. It was something I felt, if we had a house, so I had to get the finance department at the Rhinos to agree to it. If we had a house that had an understandable landlord, we could stick 3 or 4 rugby lads in that house, leave them alone. If you remember, it was right over the bridge. I've still got it. Yeah. I won't give the address of it, but it's not full of rugby lads now.
No more.
Yeah. And it worked, didn't it? It worked, and that mixing melting pot, and it became a hub for everybody. There was a year, I think it was Elliot Minchella. I think Elliot living there, and the boys had gone back and absolutely smashed it to bits. So that cost all of them a bob or two. They all had to put together for the damages. But I thought it's better to me have that safe. It's better for me to have that safety net and catch all that nonsense and deal with it our way, and have somebody that could
in-house sort of thing, because that's one thing. Obviously we've gone off topic a bit here, but you're a really versatile person, mate.
Yeah.
Like you've had multiple careers. I mean, not just rugby league. Like, so a lot of people
like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Anna. I just need to excel at 3 of them like he did. It's brilliant, that documentary.
I've seen it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's just got a mentality of what's next.
Yeah.
What else can I master?
Single-minded mentality. And I've got parts of that. I have. But right in the background, and the thing that drives me, the thing that drives me forward each and every day is I want to celebrate whatever we're doing with my friends and my family. And we were talking about, you know, I've always got a nice tinge of orange because...
You're looking brown, man.
Yeah, I like to go away. I structure my working life around So the biggest part of my week is Sky. This morning I've had to watch two games because I didn't get a chance to watch them yesterday. But by the time we've got to the end of Tuesday, I've watched all Super League fixtures.
Wow.
So some Tuesdays, most Wednesdays, some Thursdays, I'm involved in some of the... I'd put it under the umbrella of Business Solutions. So it's lots of finance and funding elements of what goes on with SMEs, small to medium enterprises. And I enjoy that because it's completely separate to rugby league. But what it does is it allows me to use the tools that rugby's give me to make the people that I know, the people who I gain that professional relationship with, make them a little bit better in what they do. So versatility is absolutely the key to life, Ollie, because we're only here for a little look. You might get 85 years if you're really, really lucky. And during that 85 years, my God, who wants to go and do the same thing day in, day out? Not chuffing me.
Yeah, it's bang on there. Yeah. Bang on. But if you go back right to the Leeds days, when you say doing the same thing day in, day out, obviously winning games, training Monday to Friday. But when you got it with a core group that you guys had back then, and I know you're from Oldham, I know Kev Sinfield's from Oldham. So were you guys doing the drive every day?
Yeah. Yeah, so I signed in 95, and at the time they'd got a couple of young boys who went on to do really well, Adrian Morley and Terry Newton, and I used to travel with them. Yestin Harris, who was an Oldhamer, he signed. So rather than meeting at Birch Services for the East Lancs boys, I'd meet Yestin, we'd drive together. We forged and formed a really good friendship. I'm catching up with him at weekend with the girls, nice. We went for a nice bite to eat, but... Yestin, then our crew expanded by a young lad from Oldham who I knew because he was from my amateur club. And he was this child prodigy, 13. Everybody said he's going to be the next captain of England. He's so disciplined, so professional. And I'm like, yeah, well, just you wait. Still, he starts travelling with us. And we used to take the piss out of him royal because, like you do when you're travelling, you go in the petrol station, you fill your car full of juice, you go in. It's a hot day. You might get yourself a little treat. I love a white Magnum. You might have a bottle of pop or, you know, all them little treat things. No, I don't want it. So Kev would be that way from 14, 15, 16, when he started travelling with us, 16 years of age, when he just started to leave school. And it's no, you know, it's no shock to me he's gone on to do what he's done. I just find it amazing that he's kept that momentum and he's kept that discipline. Discipline's a huge part of everybody that's successful, even Arnie. His discipline would have been unshakable because when you are single-minded like that, everybody else falls by the wayside. So to balance that, they're the absolute apex predators of that kind of attitude and characteristic. So Kev... And I've always been really lucky. I've always played with some incredible rugby league players, but bloody good blokes as well who've given me loads of things that I've, like a magpie, I've stole them and I've gone, I'm having that. So who I am now at 50, I'm 50 now, 50? Ollie. Yeah, I know what you're thinking.
That time, those teeth, mate.
Yeah, they're good teeth for a 50-year-old. Just good brushing, Ollie.
Yeah, I'll have to take notes.
Yeah. Turkish toothpick? No, they're not. They're not Turkish. They're from a dentist not far from here.
Look
actually.
Good.
Yeah, a good friend of mine who's a sponsor is a York lad. He was a sponsor of rugby league in general. Had a conversation with me one day and said, "Look, when you're ready to get them gravestones sorted out, give me a shout and I'll look after you." So yeah, I'm pleased for him. I'm pleased he did that for me. So going back to the people who I've spent time with, I'm a mad note maker.
Love that.
I've got reams, I've got books everywhere.
Everywhere.
Full of shit, full of nonsense that I can't remember what it means, but I just try and record things, I just try and remember things. Back in the days of the late 90s, early noughties, we'd be given a file of facts at the end of the year. And you'd sit in your meetings and you'd make notes in your little file of facts. I bet you don't even know what a bloody file of facts is now, yeah. It's a ring-binded A3 size.
Yes, I know.
Booklet type thing. I've got loads of them still up in my loft. Now and then I'll have a mad moment. I'll go up and I'll read it and I'll think, oh yeah, I remember that now. So I do think that being aware of the people around you and understanding what they can give you for you to take away, you know, that's important. I'm also a generous person, and I'm happy to tell anybody and everybody what's worked for me. And if it can help you, then fair play. If it's not, then don't judge me.
I totally agree with that. But then there's a fine line between that as well, because I think some people, then not the handout word, but I think you've got to figure out your own fuck ups on the way. Like, if you don't learn them, you're gonna, like, you don't, they're not like, oh, they're setbacks, they're learning curves, you know what I mean? Yeah. If that's in business, if that's in rugby, if that's in life, like, you've got to sometimes experience those hardships.
Yeah, because if you're afraid to make a mistake, you're never going to push those boundaries, are you? Mm-hmm. You've got to put yourself in a position. I think about the job that I'm doing now in regards to Sky. I made a mess of so many of them early experiences. But just to have the courage of my conviction to keep turning up, keep stepping forward and keep saying, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do it, but I'll have a go.
Love that.
And you know, I've been doing it a good chunk of time now. It's maybe 14, 15 years I've been doing it. Still learning. I'm still listening. I caught up with my old boss yesterday, and there was my old boss, Eddie Emmons, Terry O'Connor, myself. We had coffee and a catch up. We do it once a year, just a bit of a what have you been up to, and people like Eddie Emmons and Steve Orr were really good with me.
Wow.
When I first turned up, they imparted loads of knowledge, loads of experience, loads of advice. I listened to some of it, not all of it, but I was grateful to them both for all of it. And Eddie's still trying to tell me what to do. He's still picking holes in everything that I do, but why would you not listen to a man who's been that good at something that's a really unique skill?
That's one thing I want to ask you as well. I could go down the rugby route and we could talk about rugby. Okay, I'm going to ask you one question, because I know you just said, I've always seen you, and you've always probably been, to some people, the enforcer. And I like that. You know, whenever I go on YouTube, type in your name, you know, just a bit of motivation, just see you just flying out the line and just getting into people. And like, is that, like, have you always got, all right, like, I'm, like, you know, in ice hockey, they have that guy who just comes out and just goes guns blazing at people.
I don't know is the answer. All I can tell you is I'm a July baby, so you understand the quartiles, don't you? The way that the year's divided up, four different chunks.
Yeah.
And if you're born in the first one, maturity comes quicker to you. You know, you'll have a little tash and a little beard and, you know, you'll develop quicker, deeper voice, and you'll have more confidence. And those typically, athletically, are the ones right at the front of the queue. Mm. So the further back, you know, July, August babies have to fight really hard. So from day dot, I was fighting. My school was predominantly a football school. So in my school year, when we played rugby league, I had to play a year up. Yeah. So effectively, I'm playing 2 years up. Then when I started playing open age, men's rugby, I'm 16 years of age.
Oh, wow.
It didn't faze me, because I'd always played against people a little bit bigger than me. So there's a little bit of that, you know, in terms of my upbringing. But there's also this deep ingrained, I'm gonna show you, because, you know, we'll talk about it. I had an accident at 15. I lost my right eye, and I had a lot of people who doubted my ability and capability to do the things that I wanted to do. So I was like, well, I'll fucking show you.
Love that.
And if you don't think I can do it, then, you know, let's have a little dance. But
I like that.
In the different teams that I played in, I was never the biggest. I was never the toughest. I was never the strongest. I'd like to think I just kept turning up, Ollie. And I would go into a battle not sure whether I could win it. And I think that in itself is a little bit of the psyche that you need to play that role. But I think, and I don't mind. I love it that everyone goes, oh, I remember you. You were an handful. I played the game.
Yeah.
I played the game, and I played 400 odd times and played it at the highest level for a long time. So there were other elements of my game. I probably just play up to this. Yeah. I play up to the dirty bastard a little bit too much, but
Ben
care.
Walker said this to me. He goes, people recognise Barry for that side, but he said he had some really good sleight of hands, ball playing and training. You'd pull things out your ass, and he was like, you know, I think that, like you said, because they see this version, they don't actually remember, but
yeah,
that's smudged over.
It's not as glitzy in Hollywood, is it? But so Ben having that ability to instinctively know where the ball's going to be. We only trained maybe 10 or 15 times together before he started saying to me, look, if I'm on your left, I'll shout. You don't even have to look at me. I'll just find the ball. And we started to develop that. When things started to go wrong for him at Leeds, he became homesick and wanted to go home. And I think Northern Eagles was his next club after the Rhinos. And that's the direction he took. But he had bloody big shoes to fill because he was effectively replacing Yestin Harris, who was a club legend at that time. So yeah, listen, I played the game. I loved it. I won everything there is. But what I'm more grateful for is the friendships, the bonds, and the lessons that I've been able to take forward.
I like that. This is the next topic I'll go into then. I'm really interested because transitions, okay?
Yeah.
So you winning all the comps that you've won, playing in all the prolific teams that you've been involved in. And it comes a lot with people when they transition out of sports, they hit a bit of a wall, a bit of a, what's next for me? What's my purpose? And I think, you know, now you've got things in place. They've got like rugby league cares. They've got plans in place for a lot of transition out. But back then when you retired in the 2000s, I don't know if it was in place as much. How did you come across, like, how did you find the transition?
Easier than most because, and I'll be eternally grateful to the club, they find something for me to do. I retired in 2005 at the end of that season. I went on and played a part-time witness season. At the end of 2006, I finished full stop. I was still coaching. I'd coached since I was sort of 23-year-old, 24-year-old, because it was a way for me to keep in touch with my mates at Waterhead, which was my amateur club. So I'd coach and assistant coach during a long time, and then I did the kids. I felt like I had a real desire to help some of those rough diamonds, some of those younger players get through to that first level. So coming out at the next level in terms of the transition question, I was luckier than more. So I lost, and I was talking to Benny Westwood. I was doing a podcast for Sky the other day, and he said when he first retired, he was employed by the club and he was employed to come and watch the games. And he said he found it really difficult. And I said, I did too, because I love JP to bits. I've got a great deal of respect for Jimmy Peacock, but he came. I gave him my number and we did a big thing about it on Boxing Day at the Boxing Day game. So I'd done 10 years as a number 10. I gave him the number 10 and was incredibly honoured to do that for him. But the world-class player that he was, it sometimes was hard to watch somebody in what I felt was my position, my role, my number, my job, and doing it far better than I ever did in a completely different way, but far better than I ever did. That's tough, that. But you've got a process that you've got to go through. It's like a grieving process. You've got to the death of that number 10 in all intents and purposes has then led to a reborn of the next version of the front rower and the enforcer and the character and the bloke that everybody wants to follow over the trenches. So that period didn't take as long for me as it would take for some. I'd say within the first year, I'd sort of come to terms with it. I'm a Rhinos fan because of the way that they've treated me, the way that they've treated me during my career, my post-career stuff. I did the 10, 11 years working with the corporate and commercial department, combining it with all the other things that I was doing, head of youth being one of them. So 11 years within the club. So 21 years in total. Since I've left, there hasn't been a time that I've gone back that I've not been greeted with a smile. Wow. You know, and if I've said, oh, I've got some friends that I'd like to come watch, of course I can. The voluntary work that I do with the ex-players association and the foundation, I really treasure that. I really value that because, as I said, I think I owe them a great deal of gratitude because of the tools that they give me to go on to be successful in the next phase of life. So transition's really hard.
Yeah.
But what I would say is It's nobody else's job except your own. You're in charge of your own destiny, and you're in charge of that transitional part of the next phase. Because people say, oh, you know, he's 35 and he's retired from rugby league, and you're not retired from anywhere because you've just got to get another job.
Yeah.
It doesn't pay you nowhere near enough money. You'll know this better than me. My best days, my best contract was my second to last contract, and it was £60,000 for the year. Wow. In a period of time where everybody around me would probably be on a little bit more, a little bit less. I was just above the middle, but I didn't care because it was enough money to pay the bills, get me through the week, and I just loved playing at Headingley, packed crowd. Like you say, it was at the beginning of the period where we were winning all the time, so we won most of the time while I was there. At the back end, we won nearly all the time, and then the good times started to follow from that. So I do believe you've got to take charge, take control, and be the captain of your own ship. Don't expect anybody to do it for you. But as a sportsman, take advantage of everything. Say yes to everything, whether it's a night with sponsors or whether it's a little bit of a qualification that might propel you to that next industry that you go and work in.
So true, that is. So true. And one thing I like and I really inspires me when you talk is I think you having that tradesman background at the start has always probably got that workman mindset. So you're used to, early mornings, Monday to Friday doing that. So maybe transition out at the rugby stage, coming back and you probably got your finger in one door already. You're doing stuff with Leeds still. Like you said, you've got investment properties. Like there's... You're always thinking, you're always on. And I think, like you said, opportunities, if it comes to doing corporate meetings or sponsorship dinners or, some players have an individual sponsor, keep in touch with them. It's just inspiring for me because you're probably thinking outside the box more than the average person does. And especially probably back then as well, Baz.
Always say yes.
Yeah.
That's my advice. Always say yes. And a great friend of mine, Chris Gibson, gave me a really good saying. You just never know what can come from a cup of coffee. Mm. So in my mind today, I get a random text from a no mark from years ago. Have you got an hour on a Tuesday afternoon? Mm. Yes, I have, Ollie.
Yes, top man.
Yes,
love
I have.
That.
Because you just never know. And at the very least, it'll help you. Mm. If I get something out of it, then I'm happy. But as I said before we started recording, and you've got a rugby league understanding and maybe a rugby league background better than I could ever imagine, but I think the rugby union boys do it better than the rugby league boys. And it's one thing that I used to say to players while I were playing, post-career, and I'll say it now, if you're a young player or even a player in his mid-20s with a polo shirt with the crest of your club on, and you're in a room full of sponsors, you have earned the right to go up to somebody, shake their hand and say, hi, how are you doing? I'm Barry. Mm-hmm. Nice to meet you. Take away the awkwardness of whether they know you or not. You're in the club's gear, so chances are they'll recognise the fact that you are a player. Shake their hand and ask them what they do. Ask them who they are and try and get a rapport with them and try and understand who they are and maybe there might be something for you. But it might not be that person. It might be somebody else. When your name gets brought up into a conversation, they'll say, I actually met him the other day. What a good guy.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I think because even with you, Baz, like the person on the field, they might think, fuck, he's intimidating. He'll intimidate me to come speak to you. Then when you come speak to you, totally different persona, perception of what you think of the person. And
even at my maddest.
Yeah.
Even at my absolute peak.
Yeah.
I'm still just a normal lad. Mm. I'm still just Barry. And when I was at my craziest, I'd maybe have had two kids. So I'd be fighting in lumps on the pitch. And then I'd walk in the bar and I'd be, pushing a pram or I'd have a baby in my arm. And that release for me kept me the right side of the law, I think, because the way I was going when I was in my teens with the people I was surrounding myself with, I might not have had, I might have been one of them talking to you on a Saturday afternoon before Christmas, before you go on your lads' night out. But I'll tell you a little story, actually. I played against St. Helens in a semi-final at DW, JJB back then. And my mum and dad went to watch most home games, if not all of them, but very few away games, only the big ones. Mm. So my mum and dad have gone to this game, and Saints were great back then. Kieran Cunningham,
yeah,
at his absolute best. And I'd had a bit of a shocker, and they'd in the game plan, they'd planned for, as soon as Barry gets one or two defenders around him, he's going to turn around, he's going to find an offload. Mm. So we need a third or even fourth defender to just try and work a little bit harder to either stop him offloading it or get the ball if he does. My first three have gone to Paul Sculthorpe, I don't know, bloody, you know, it was St. Helens players.
Mm.
Or I couldn't find a gap or a space. So my game, I was off in my game, I was cranky. I'd got the ball pinched off me in a tackle, and I turned round, and there was a guy called Mark Shields. Mm. He was about 6'5". He'd be a good 115 kgs, big bastard like. So he stood there. He's got the ball in his hand, so I've just fucking punched him. Boom, flat. And I'm thinking, well, you shouldn't have nicked the ball off me. What I didn't know is somebody else had nicked the ball off me and passed it to him. So I'm walking in the bar, and my mum and dad are sat there with the missus and the kids, and just behind them's Mark Shields. And my mum said, I don't know how you can sleep at night, you. Peter Shields, not Mark Shields, Peter Shields, sorry, bloody hell, my memory's shocking. Peter Shields. She said, I don't know how you can sleep at night, you. And I said, wow, what's up? She said, look at the state of his eyes, black, it's closed. I said, well, he shouldn't have nicked the ball off me. She said, he didn't nick the ball off you. Bloody Paul Sculthorpe's nicked the ball off you. Well, he were looking at me. And I've just the nearest person, but Peter Shields, not Mark Shields. Sorry about my poor memory. But that then, again, the instant I've got off the pitch, I'm like, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. Did you go up to him and say that?
I made a point, and I think I'm going to stick to it. I'm not going to apologise for anything I did on
the field.
I think it's contentious now, isn't it, with all the, you know, I was telling you about my body's a bit of a state now, but, you know, all the concussion stuff. And I dare say I'd be responsible for a few concussions in my time. So, yeah, I'm going to stick to it for now. I'm not going to apologise, because I think to myself that we all played the same game back in my day. It's not my fault. I were a bit better than everyone else.
Just the way it is, isn't it, Baz?
Of course, yeah. You had your chance.
I want to ask you as well, mate, Stuart Fielden and you.
Yeah.
I don't know if you boys are sound or anything now, but you boys used to go at each other. Well, you used to go at him a fair whack. Was it always just something it was on when you got on the field, or?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah. Because he was a very good player, and there was a period of his time, 16 years again, he was the best player.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the best forward in the world, not necessarily the best player. He was the best forward in the world. So, yeah, I knew he was a good player. I knew, you know, he was important to Bradford, but he was one of four. Well, he was one of four players. They used to have the awesome foursome.
Yeah, yeah.
Big Brian McDermott be there, Paul Anderson, Joe Vergara, big human beings. But he was the one, I think, that I enjoyed, because he didn't back down. The other three, Brian Mack, who, as we both know, is an intimidating fella. Me and him would have a clash. Wouldn't last very long. He'd look at me, I'd look at him, and I think, oh, I'll probably stay away from you. Big Baloo, I had in my back pocket. And Joe Vergara, were that big.
Yeah, wow.
It was just hard to dominate him, because he was like a barn door.
Yeah,
he was
right.
Honestly, he was three foot wide. To get your arms around him and knock him off his game took a lot of energy. Yeah. So with Big Stu, who's about 6'3", 6'4", about 105 kgs, you know, he was manageable for me. Yeah. So we struck up that little friendship stroke, frenemy, you know, partnership, and I enjoyed it. And I don't think he has the same recollections as me. I don't think he had the same fun that I did, but as I say, he was invited to the same party I was. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it.
People loved it at the time, and I do, to be fair, Ollie, I do get a lot of people say, oh, I used to go to them games, and I used to, oh, we'd only be watching one thing. And I do think the game would benefit from a little bit of that. I just think in 2023, we'll never go back to it. And it's a shame because there are some elements of it when it's gladiatorial and one-on-one like that, there are some elements of it that it's why I started out. Yeah. You know, I love me combat sports, love boxing, love MMA a little bit more than boxing because with MMA, somebody's getting knocked out, aren't they?
Do you watch it quite often?
I do. I haven't watched Weekend yet.
Volkanovski and...
Yeah, I haven't watched that yet. Who did I watch last? I was watching one the other morning. It was the South African who beat the Aussie.
Whitaker,
yeah.
Duplessis against Whitaker. Great fight.
Yeah, I wanted Whitaker to win. Well,
yeah.
He's only that far off being a rugby lad, so is Volkanovski. So
yeah.
So
yeah.
I tend to shout for one of them, but I'm an underdog.
Do you think as well? Like I remember we'd have Baz Bash sessions at Leeds, and we'd be doing a lot of tackling, but a lot of wrestling. And there's so many things that implemented in our tackle and wrestling, where you know you keep your hips in tight, head dug into their chest, you know, where they try and get as tight as possible so they can't move.
Yeah.
And you see it in the jiu-jitsu side of MMA, you just think maybe Volkanovski's picked up a lot of, even the way rugby tackled the guy on the weekend. I'm spoiling it now for you.
Yeah,
but
without a doubt. It's a certain type of individual that plays our sport, so he could lend himself to, you know, fighting bulls or, you know, having a shield and a spear in the old days. So it's a very specific individual that plays our sport. I think those guys are the exact same person. They're doing it on their own. It's a one man sport rather than a team sport. But I'm sure he'd have been successful at whatever he put his mind to, Volkanovski, because he's pound for pound one of the best, if not the best. He's a great individual to look at, to watch, and to appreciate for what he is. And he's only, I don't know what his height is, but he won't be much taller than you, will he? He's 4'8", 4'9".
I think he's scratching it. Yeah, he's scratching 5.
Yeah,
he's a warrior, mate.
So taller than you.
Just, mate, just. But he's always punching above his weight, isn't he? He's the boys he's fighting.
Absolutely.
Way taller.
I love it. I love it. And that, again, I think there's many different forms of toughness, and Rob Burrow had one of the purest, because everybody was bigger than him. Mm. Everybody was bigger than Rob, and he didn't care who they were.
Yeah.
He jumped up as high as he could and smashed him around the knees and dropped him.
Who was that video? I've seen it. I was watching it live. He tried to fight. He had a fight with that Tongan.
Epihame Luwake. I think that's how he pronounced it.
And he's swinging for him. I thought, fair play.
So let me tell you that story. So at the time, he was coaching the foundation, which later went to be the scholarship. Mm. Him and Carl Ablett, Jamie Jones Buchanan, I'm not sure whether JP had a little bit of a role to play somewhere. But we had the four of them helping out with the under-16s. And I always spent a lot of time with Rob, loved his company. And I was like, and he kept getting taken out off the ball. If you remember, he was wearing head guards and sort of getting quite a few unnecessarily late shots. And I said, the next one that does it to you, don't fuck about, stand up and put one on his chin. And he's like, oh. And I said, because no big man worth his salt is going to hit you back. Mm. He's just not, Rob. Nobody's going to hit you back. Not unless they're a 4'8" player like you. Not unless they're Ollie Olds, but nobody's going to hit you back. And it'll just draw a line in the sand.
Yeah, yeah.
And and I loved it. It was a Challenge Cup game, so I wasn't working on it. So I was sat there going, get in there, lad. Get up, boy. tough Roy and tough Rob, and it's inspirational to see where he is now and the fight he's still got in him. He's sad. I mean, obviously it cuts everybody deep, doesn't it, when you see him and he looks poorly. But in himself he's still got that fighting spirit.
Obviously, you guys have got a close bond, but when I was in the academy, he was someone who always give time to us. Like, he'd always come in, Ollie, how you doing, mate? And you're like, you remember my name, sort of thing. And that's the little things you remember about people. But talking about going against all the odds in science, like, you know, you have to be X amount size, this type of caliber of player, and he just defeats all the odds, you know what I mean? The way he plays. But I know, obviously, a lot of the illness he's going through right now. And I know you're deeply close with him, and it's a group of you, and you've done a lot of charity events for him, and you've been massively involved. How does that, the perspective on it must shift everyone. Like it hit everyone. It's not just his hit Leeds, but I mean, instantly, if I reflect myself, whatever you might be going through right now, whatever someone's going through right now, it makes you realize what's real and what's not. What are we actually worried about right now? When you look at Rob's situation, you go, fuck.
What's important to Rob is his family. Those kids of his, he dotes on those kids. The way he speaks about Lindsay, the way he treats his sisters, his mum and dad, not at any point, and I've said this recently, that I see him every couple of weeks. I text him every few days. We'll chat shit. We'll throw Alan Partridge lines at one another and Mike Bassett lines and all that stuff. But every now and then, you know, you just take stock and you think, if he can still have a smile on his face with everything that he's going through, there's nothing for anybody to complain with. And without being too dramatic, and like I say, I'll go and see him. First question, I'll walk through the door and he'll say, "Hey, up, big nose, how are you doing?" And that's him. His first question is to see how I am. Well, his first statement wrapped up in an insult, but it's always, you know, how are you? And that's what he wants to talk about, what's going on in your life. And he'll ask about Billy, because he coached Billy, my son. Ask about the girls, and then, you know, eventually we get back onto Partridge and Mike Bassett. But he's just an incredible human being, and the impact he's had on so many different people, and people who know nothing about rugby league, know nothing about Rob Burrow and Leeds Rhinos prior to his diagnosis, now A, who Rob Burrow is, and B, who Kevin Sinfield is. And I'm really privileged to know both of those blokes, inside out, back to front, and they are as impressive as they look. And people ask me how you categorise, how you sum up, how you summarise those two people, and they're just one-offs. They're just incredible people with selfless attitudes that want to make the world a better place.
It's powerful, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. It's as if it's brought rugby league closer as well. Like the community is just...
I think it has as well, because I was at, I don't know, they watched the Huddersfield game, and it was the Rob Burrow family takeover day when I got covered in grass.
That's right.
Yeah, good fun. And do you know them kids, we rehearsed that once in the afternoon. And they did a full sort of 15-minute segment, and it was on the tannoy, so all the crowd could hear it. And it's obviously, it's live to all those people who are watching it as well. They're going to be something special when they grow up. They will, I think, do something later on that will be, you know, incredible, like their parents have done as well. So the inspirational way that he affects everybody, going back to that match, there's no way Leeds were going to lose that match against Huddersfield, but there's no way that you as a man, as a parent, as a friend, as a family member, as a fan of somebody who is that impressive, you can't sit back and go, "Yeah, I'm gonna applaud that, because that's really special." The way that he's conducted and carried himself is worthy of everybody's respect.
It's powerful. It really is. It's inspiring, and it just shows the character of Rob, not just the player, but as a person. He's a warrior as a person. Like you said, the first thing he says when he sees you, it's not about him, it's about you.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we might get so consumed in our own thoughts and our own feelings that we actually forget about the real world as such. Yeah. And
it's important to have that perspective, isn't it, Ollie?
And massively.
I'd say you and I are quite similar. You know, I'm driven.
Yeah.
I know what I want. I'm not afraid to work for it. There aren't enough hours in the day sometimes, but I also like to relax. I have this cycle of work hard, play hard, work hard. And last bit is the most important one, because you can't always be on holiday and you can't always be working. But if you are doing what you're doing now with a view to then getting to that next bit and either piling in at 100 miles an hour or enjoying it for every last ounce of what it's worth, then that's, I think that's living. That's not just existing, that's living. And I've met lots and lots and lots of people who have influenced me in so many different ways, and I'm a version of everybody that I've come across. All the good ones, I take a little bit of that and they're on little shelves in my brain, and every now and then one will spill out because it will remind me of something that somebody said 10 years ago, 15 years ago, or last week. I think that's part of the growth of the human mind and human heart. You've got to be always in tune with the good things around you, but learn from those battles as well, because those scars heal, but you can draw on that experience.
When you talk about, you know, the career and the growth mindset, Barry, like, I think that's what one thing that really inspires me when I talk to you now, when I see you on TV talking, and like you say, you know, you've got investments, you're always going. I see you training all the time in the gym, and
I'm booked on tonight, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I biffed it off to come here, but
appreciate
won't
that.
Miss it. I think you're the same, that healthy body, healthy mind, healthy heart and soul, they're all connected. I believe in the work-life balance model, the three circles that are all interlinked. And everyone's got their own version of that. And if you're spending too much time on work, then that circle doesn't allow for everything else in your life. But also, if work isn't going well, then the world's caving in.
Yeah.
But if you give equal amounts of energy and time to the people around you, my friends, my family, you know, invested in me as an individual, but then invested in me as a person that's a provider, as a father, as a husband, as a son.
Yeah.
You know, it's important that I look after my parents and make
Love that.
Sure their life is as good as can be. So I do believe in fitness, in health. I know you're looking at me going, Jesus wept, what?
No,
what's he actually doing when he's at the gym?
I see you doing your burpees, your wall balls.
I'm all right.
But
I'm okay.
The key element in all that, Barry, is like, we were talking before this, you're like, my shoulder's fucked. Yeah. Can you sit here? My neck's buggered.
Yeah.
And I'm going, but you keep turning up.
Because motion is lotion. The minute you stop doing it, then it does go pear-shaped, doesn't it? So I had 26 operations, or I have had up to this point. I've had 9 since I finished playing.
Wow.
So it's a lot, isn't it? And you know... You know when you play the game, you know you're going to get busted. You know you're going to have a damaged body. I've got bulging discs in my neck. I've got a replacement joint in that left shoulder. I've had 4 operations. I've just had the latest reconstruction about 2 years ago. So, look, all that shit is all relevant. I would not be sat here.
Yeah.
I'd be on the building sites, probably with a bad back, a bad neck, and shit shoulders.
Yeah.
But the memories I've got, when I've gone on the journey that I've got, I wouldn't trade anything for the world. And I feel sorry for the people who don't have that, who can't then connect the good with the bad, or can't overlook the bad because the good overtakes it. I feel sorry for those people. But I know, from my point of view, I wouldn't change a second. All the mistakes I've made, all the bad times have given me an appreciation of the good times. And I'm here talking to you. What's better?
Baz, I love that, man. I really appreciate that. It means a lot. And I just love everything up what you're talking about, what you're saying, because it all makes sense and it all adds up. And I got told this one thing by a mentor once, and I've done it. So he said, you need to find your limits. You need to find where your burnout points are. But if you don't ever push your burnout points, you'll never know.
Yeah.
So he's kind of said to me, he said, you know, in your 30s, you should be pushing your body to extreme limits so that you go, that's me there, I'm fucked. So I need to pull back one or two places. So then later on in life, when you recognize I'm coming close to burnout, you have to then go, okay, what am I doing? I need to reevaluate this. Am I spending too much time at work? Am I too long in the gym? Or am I, you know, socializing too much, you know, out and about? But it really made sense to me then. So then after a while, I recognize, oh, I'm close to burnout. My head's too much in the laptop at the moment. But I think you got to find out where your limits are. And I think sports has brought me there, because you push beyond your limits. Pre-seasons up those hills at Leeds, longest weekend training, you know, they calcify you a bit, and strengthen you to go, okay, well, I'm going down this new path now. I'm going to be a presenter, for instance, but okay, if I can do that.
Well, it's the tools, isn't it?
Yeah,
I talked about the tools, and The funny thing about Roundy Hills, that's the one. They wanted to get rid of them. So when I first joined, there was the beginnings of, well, why are we actually doing this? What's the scientific sporting objective here? I was like, I don't care what the objective is. The ability to get up those hills when your ass is hanging out.
Mm.
And I've lost my dignity on those hills too many times to say it doesn't serve a purpose. So I'm glad you remembered that, because there's lots of different versions of that. Weekend just gone, I did the Yorkshire Three Peaks.
Wow.
Which isn't a massive thing, but still, it's one of those where it's a 9-hour, obviously, up, down, long, you know, 20 odd miles.
Mm.
It's a real test and a challenge of what your ability to keep going is.
Yeah.
So I've climbed Kilimanjaro, wow. I've been to Everest Base Camp, I've done treks around the Grand Canyon, Zion Park, and going up Angel's Landing, which is somewhat really special, really unique. And every single time I've been surrounded by people who don't have a sporting background, or they're not successful in any way, shape, or form. And I've found that they've actually given me something, inspired me in a certain way, where I've gone away and gone, do you know what? It wasn't the getting to the top that I value. It's the conversations and those little gems of wisdom that I take away. And I have a really strong memory, because whenever I think of Kilimanjaro, I think of the guy who I met who I spent the night in a tent freezing my bollocks off at the top. Yeah. You know, and those memories are all part of the tapestry of life. But it going back to the health and the fitness and the exercise and knowing what your limits are, I think it's good when you've got that innate desire to keep getting back up.
Mm.
So I do go to a gym, and it's a variant of CrossFit. It's not CrossFit because I'm not up to that anymore, but it's a strength and conditioning class. It's predominantly women, couple that run it, great people. But because it's predominantly women, nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
Nobody's looking at my bar going, seeing how much weight he's got on. Nobody's looking at me with a 17.5 kg dumbbell because I'm on a sore day going, you should have a 25, mate. Come on, get all that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when I get training with some of the big boys later on in the week or at the weekend, and we get to throw a bit of tin around, and I feel okay, and then I'm busted for 3 days after. I think that's good, because that's part of being alive. And there are so many health benefits, as everybody knows, to lifting, to carrying, to running. I've got the Great North Run coming up for the M&D Association with my good pal Terry O'Connor. We're running it in September. But as sportsmen, we'd get a peak to our weekend. We'd have a highlight at the end of every week, and it'd be gauged on winning and losing, or enjoying it, not enjoying it, injured or not injured. So you'd have something to look forward to every weekend. When you retire, you don't have those things. So it's important you put things in your year aim towards. I've always done it. I've always seen it as a real integral part to my well-being and my enjoyment of life. My weight goes up and down. I'm anywhere between 17.5 and 18.5 stone, depending on how much drink I'm consuming.
I just want your shoulders, mate. Yeah. Check them on me.
Oh, they look good, but they're fucked. They don't work. They don't work.
It's wide, you are. Yeah. Fucking wide shoulders, Baz. Yeah.
I was always, I think I'm built from, I'm from Irish Catholic stock, so you know I'm built from my family genetics. But I love the gym.
Yeah,
I love physical exercise. I love lifting and carrying. I should have been a bison or a yak or something like that in my previous life. But yeah, I love it because it gives me 45 minutes to an hour of work where I come away. I feel like I've achieved something. I can either sleep soundly at night, or I can crack on with my day if I do it early in the morning. But I think it's more important than we realise. And if more people did more of that stuff, then we'd have less mental health issues. I'm convinced of that.
I definitely agree with that. You know, a lifestyle structure, habits, and routine. Having a really good routine and surrounding yourself with right people. Like I was going to ask you then, have you got a certain quote that you know that resonates with you? My one was someone said to me, show me your friends, I'll show you your future.
Yeah.
And I think that then is massively about your environment, who you surround yourself with. And that when I had a penny drop moment and I think, you know, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Why am I in this position on a nightclub doing dumb shit? Or then you go, I need to change a few things. Yeah. And realizing, recognizing, getting around good people where you can levitate to.
Yeah. And aren't we fortunate to have led the life that we've led, that you get exposed to some of those elite level thinkers. And it's all based around our sport of rugby league. But the fortunate part of what we've done, the life that we've led, is you meet some crackers, you meet some belters. Yeah, yeah. I've got lots of little quotes and lots of little sound bites, and the job that I do on Sky, I'm forever chucking them up. But I think the one that I live my life by, and it's not an on-field, it's not a day in, day out, it's not a, this is what makes me driven in the morning, and this is what my, it's something my grandma said to me. My grandma's, she died about 12 years ago, but she's still, you know, in lots of my thoughts and lots of the things that I do. And she said, Barry, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. And I don't suffer fools if you're not the type of person I don't want to spend my time with, and I can't mold you into trying to be a bit better, then I won't waste my time. But I think, again, if you do good things, most of the time it's going to come back and you'll get a little bit of good fortune along the way. You make your own luck, but if you live your life in that sort of mantra that you don't have to be a dick, you don't have to be a dick to be ruthless and focused and single-minded. We were going back to Arnie, and two things that stuck out to me. I've never heard Arnie admit that he'd taken steroids, unless I'm not paying attention. I believe that people who take steroids cut corners. I obviously can see from my body, I've never took it, but I've enjoyed the journey. And the second thing that stuck out to me was he said, I'm not an easy person to live with. And I know that's me, and I apologise to my very close friends, and I apologise to my family, particularly my kids, a lot. And I said, look, I know I'm not, I'm hard in the way that I deal with things, but it works for me. And I know it's not easy to be around me sometimes, but I mean well.
Yeah.
I just want you to be as good as you can be. Whatever you do, be good at it. And that's my way of trying to get you to be happy at the end of what you do.
That's an interesting one that you said then, the last part. Regarding the Arnie thing, I'm doing a damp in your prep. I'm pretty sure he said that he took steroids once, but it was a part of there. But you know when you're like, you've got a son, you've got children, your son plays rugby.
Yeah.
How is it, you know, where sometimes you're like, if you just, like you've done the path, you've been the path before, then you can see your son or people close to you and you mean well, because it's coming from maybe like a family connection, sometimes it comes out wrong. And I'm not saying that's the truth. It happens a lot with families.
Yeah.
How does that resonate, or how do you view that?
Well, my kids are adults now. Mm. Billy's 27, Sophie's 24, Jess is 21. Sophie's into her health and fitness. Mm. You know, she's very driven. She's PT as well as a full-time job. So she's got a lot of my traits in her.
Mm.
Jess is a lot like her mum, lovely person, can live life and not pay the consequences with her. And, you know, she's not going to get, you know, she's not going to put £3 on over the weekend. She's not that type. And then Billy's a mix of the both of us. Billy's not in sport anymore. He's not in rugby league. And I never wanted him to play rugby league because of the things that he'd done to my body, the damage it had done. But when he wanted to do it, I was always there for him and I always supported him. But to answer your question, the kids know me. So the kids will roll their eyes, or they'll take it on board and they'll walk away and they'll say, thanks for that. But I'm not a coach to my kids. I'm not a mentor. Mm. I'm not this big presence that's going to give them a bolt of inspiration. Most of the time, it's just, well done.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really proud of you and I love you and you're doing great. And them small things mean more than me walking around with a book of quotes going, you need to do this one here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The harder you work, the luckier you get. They're not, you know, they're my kids. They've been around me all their lives. So treat them as human beings, as individuals. And I'm really proud of them. They're doing well. And my wife has a saying, you're only as happy as your unhappiest child. And our kids are doing great at the minute. So bearing in mind what we said about Rob, some of the challenges that are going on with people all around us, we're good at the minute, and you've got to appreciate the good times because you don't know how long they'll last.
Mm. It's true, that is. Baz, I've loved this chat, mate.
Yeah, me too. It's good. Thanks amazing. For inviting me.
I haven't seen you in, like I said, over 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You're doing amazing, mate, and I love what you're doing.
You too. Very proud of you.
Well, last question I want to ask you before I wrap up is just, what are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for friends, family, good and bad experiences. Mm. So that's four things, but they equally all mean that I can get up every day fully motivated, ready to take the day on, ready to meet challenges full on.
Love that. Well, I'm grateful for probably grateful for this podcast, but it's given me a chance to come across some amazing people, but in particular you, Baz, because you've seen me as a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And it's as if I've come full circle now, and I've still got plenty of time to grow and learn as a person. But
you've got plenty to offer people, Ollie. Yeah, your experiences and the way that you articulate that, the way that you communicate that is a real skill and a real asset. So I'm watching what you're doing with pride, mate. Keep it up.
Appreciate that, mate. I'm just grateful that I can come here today, talk to you like nothing's, like it was just like I seen you yesterday. And I mean, I learned something. Part of the reason I do this is because I learn. I sit here, I've always been a curious person. I used to sit there as a kid on my family table, and they would be talking about childhood stories, my dad and my uncle and on this now. Growing up, this, and I'd just sit there and just listen. And I think that's just incorporated into my personality today. So, man, I'm grateful for coming here. You coming here and talking, and thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend.
Don't just talk it, walk it.
Walk is only.
Don't just talk it, walk it.